It's that time of the year where all the spirits come out to play. A terror grips the streets, and your darkest fears come to life. Pull in close as we journey through the darkness into the realms of the Monster Cast.
Hello out there, everyone in podcast land. This is Jeremy from the Front Row Network here on NPR Illinois, and I just wanted to drop in here to throw you a quick note about what you're about to hear. So back in March, before the world blew up, our very own Alex Aronia from Super GG Radio went to C2E2 along with our other correspondent, Jeff Leathers, and conducted a bunch of interviews. Now, our plan was to release those very quickly out into the world, but then, as I said before, the world kind of exploded, and everything got kind of pushed to the back burner. But one of those conversations that was held and an interview that was conducted at C2E2 was with Sandy King Carpenter, who is, of course, the wife of John Carpenter, the legendary horror director. So we decided that we would hold that interview until our Monster Cast Month promotion because of the obvious connection. They talk about a lot of things in this, including Sandy's production company, the new comic book line that they started, and much, much more. So without further ado, here is the network's own Alex Aronia talking to Sandy King Carpenter at C2E2 2020.
Okay, this is Alex Arona with NPR Front Row Network and Sandy King Carpenter. How are you today?
I'm doing great. How can you not do great at C2E2?
Oh, that's good to hear. Yeah, it's really nice out today. We got a good turnout.
Yeah, we did, and I love the Chicago fans are just the best.
Oh, really? Chicago?
Oh, yeah. No, Chicago's great. They like the art. They actually read the books. They come back and talk to you about the stories. It's a really fun city to come to.
They're engaged.
They are.
So, from my understanding, you're CEO of Storm King Comics.
Yep.
How did that just come to be that you were, like, you were around it so much you kind of knew how the business dealings were?
Oh, no, you got to learn the business. I mean, I'm CEO of Storm King Productions, which makes, that's where all of our television and movies come from. And when we had a chance, no, we just made a decision to go into comics because our fans cross gaming, comics, movies, and TV.
Hitting all media.
Yeah. Yeah, the genre audience is in all those spaces. And they'd come to John to put his name on comic books for years, but generally just because they wanted his name to sell books.
Yeah.
And that wasn't good enough. So we finally had a story that was so visually driven and really suited itself to comics. So we decided to do one, and as John said, what do we know about comics? And I said, nothing, but we'll learn. And so we spent 2 years researching the business, the art meaning how they're put together and all that. We had very generous friends in the comic industry, Steve Niles, Jimmy Palmiotti, Tim Bradstreet. Those guys were great at guiding us through and showing us those ropes. Bruce Jones showing me how you write for comics and what's different about screenwriting and comic writing. All of those things went into our first comic.
Okay, and then do you feel like you've grown into your own, feeling like you have a good grip on it? Do you feel like you've kind of started working towards mastering your craft in that field?
Well, yeah, what I do is never presume I know it all, because, you know, your biggest learning curve is through failure. But actually, I always made sure that the masters of what they do were working with us. And I still try and have the best writers, the best artists, the best cover artists. Fortunately, because of particularly who my husband is, we attract some great people. And then because of how we do our business, we keep attracting really good talent.
And you, of course, are part of the research and the organization side?
Oh, I do all that.
Yeah.
No, I...
You wear a lot of hats, as they say?
Yeah, it's my coming. I edit. I write. I pay the checks. You know, so yes. But we put together comics the same way we put together our movies out of the same offices. Everything's seen by John. Everything's handled by me. I hire all the people. And, but it's nice. I mean, it's for us, it's fun. And we try and make it fun for everybody involved with the company.
Okay, that makes a lot of sense. What is your day-to-day like?
Insane.
Is it insane?
Yeah, it starts pretty early and goes pretty late because we still are doing television and movies. And at the same time, we now have a pretty broad range. Like right now, there's 12 books in production.
Wow.
And you know, we have the annual anthology of horror stories that comes out every October, Tales for Halloween Night. We still have the Once in a Month Tales of Science Fiction. And
which Tales of Science Fiction looks like it's got quite a bit going on still. Like it's the graphic novel's going for quite a while.
Oh yeah, I generally have those planned like 3 years in advance.
Wow.
And that's the only way to be responsible to the shops and to distribution and to the fans is to have that planned schedule, deliveries, account for what's delays, those kinds of things. And then we just launched Storm Kids.
Yes, Storm Kids.
Which has the young adults, written by Louise Simonson and Steve Niles and people like that, so that I'm bringing what I think is a higher level of writing and the same kinds of artists that I have in my adult books. And then now we're branching down into the MG squad, which is the 8 to 12-year-olds with a book, Grimstown Terror by Neo Edmonds,
yeah,
where it's Power Rangers. And that's going to be a lot of fun.
He's got a good track record.
Oh, yeah. No, he rocks. And the art's by Renee DeLees, who normally does real fairy tale art. You combine those two, and it's magic. And then I've got one for little kids for Halloween by Jeff Balke and Paul Story that it's got his webcomic that's Stanley the Squirrel and his friends and an adventure that happens to them on Halloween.
Wow.
It's got ghost rabbits.
Oh.
So that gives us something for, you know, when people come to me at the convention, it's guys looking at my adult horror. They have a little kid in tow. I had nothing to give the kids.
Yes.
And I also really care about the stories being appropriate for their ages.
Yes, yeah.
And, you know, I don't want to hear that they've got an 8-year-old that watches Walking Dead. A, I want to say, why is your 8-year-old watching Walking Dead?
Yeah.
But the other thing is, things that scare adults are more existential than things that scare children.
Yeah.
And things that scare children should also be dealt with so they can exercise their fears.
Yes, that's, you don't want to mentally scar any child.
No, and you want them to be able to safely address their fears of a lost dog, the death of their grandmother, things like that, through a story that helps them process.
And a lot of these horror stories, they tend to have some sort of like cultural relevance or some sort of conversation deeper that you want to have. So you're saying even with these child stories, you're trying to have that deeper conversation, trying to bring an understanding to children. Is that correct?
Sure. I mean, that's what the old fairy tales did. They were morality tales.
Yes.
They taught a lesson within the entertainment. Horror is an allegorical medium. The best horror is talking about something else while it's entertaining you. And there's a truth that speaks to you in you, which is why you come back to it. It's why it strikes a chord in you, and you can watch Halloween so many years later. You can watch Night of the Living Dead so many years later.
There's discussing with somebody, Night of the Living Dead and Dawn of the Dead and those kind of deeper tales.
There's something else in there that's not just pop culture. And in books, it's like I remember when I was 10 and read the original Frankenstein.
Yeah.
You know, what better book about being the other, being alienated? The monster's created in the eyes of his creator as something beautiful. He sees himself as beautiful until he sees himself through the eyes of others and sees himself as a monster and goes off in the ice to die. I mean, that's something that anyone who's ever felt isolated and alone can relate to.
Yeah. Okay, so it's a very big universal story that, at least, again, you're trying to hit all ages and trying to tell these stories.
With age-appropriate things.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So you really got something for the whole family now.
Well, hopefully. Yeah, I just want to be sure nobody's left out and nobody's messed up and everybody's happy. And has good art and it doesn't talk down to a kid.
It brings it down to their level and at least...
Yeah, in a good way.
Yeah. So along with that, Tales of Halloween Town, Halloween Night is actually being optioned over at Paramount currently.
Yeah, and I don't know how that got out, so I can't, like,
give
put the genie
details.
Back in the, I can't give out details, and I can't put the genie back in the bottle, but yes, and Paramount has been lovely to work with.
Okay, that's what I was more curious about, like, how did... If that came about, which obviously you can't really talk about, but in this case, they've been very pleasant as a partner, and
they're great.
Okay, that's good. So, being a CEO, being the head honcho, it's interesting that you've discussed it very much that your hands are still on the wheel. You're touching every piece of content. How do you feel about you like being one instead of being like kind of the above everything, really getting down and being involved with every little piece of literature and content like that? Do you feel like it's very important to do so?
Oh yeah, yeah. That's the only way you have quality control. That's the only way. We spent years building our brands, building John Carpenter's name stands for something to fans. The Storm King name. Came to stand for something, and you know it's important to deliver fan expectations. It's important to deliver what I expect and John expects, and the only way you do that is to keep your hands on it. And the only reason we do things is because it's creatively satisfying and it's fun. And when it's not, we'll just stop doing it.
See, that's really. It's a really good way to look at it. You don't see a lot of CEOs on the show floor. You don't see like the bosses up top coming down here and hanging out. But you can really feel your DNA throughout everything. It's not something that they slap his name on it and it's out the door.
No. It's not just branding. And I'm at every show for a reason. I'm the face of the company.
That's important. I saw that John did a little bit of DC work with DC Comics.
Yeah, he did the one-shot Joker for Year of the Villain.
How did that come about? Do you know how that came about?
Yeah, I knew the guys. One of the editors over at DC had come from being an editor at Boom. I knew the guys at Boom from, they're just that one of those deals. And when he went over to DC, he sent me an email. Said, what do you think? You think that because John had done Big Trouble in Little China for them and a combination Escape from New York, Big Trouble, and they had fun with that. He did one with Eric Powell and one with Anthony Birch, and everybody had fun with them and they sold really well. And so he contacted me and said, do you think he'd like to do the Joker? I said, let me think. Yes. And he goes, are you going to talk to John about it? Like, yeah, I'm going to tell him he's doing it. And I said, no, man, come on. Who doesn't want to do the Joker? And so basically I yelled across the room to John. I go, hey, you're doing the DC, you're going to do the Joker. One shot, you're the villain. He goes, are you serious? I said, yeah. And he goes, well, do they know it's me? Because he couldn't believe they asked him to do it.
Wow. So
and
so
I
humble.
I said, yeah. It's Matt from over at Boom. He goes, can Anthony do it with me? And I went, I don't think they're going to say no. You guys did really well. Boom. And, it, you know, and it just happened. And then they brought in Philip Tan as the artist, and it was just like, Jesus.
Yeah.
this rocks.
That's awesome.
Yeah. So, but it was kind of that simple, and it's the world of comics isn't that big a town, and the world of movies isn't that big a town. So, like,
a lot of people know each other.
Well, in a weird way, it's like once we came into comics and did good work, then everybody goes, oh, wow, no, they're like, serious about comics. And because, like, Tales for Halloween Night, John always writes the first story. I always write the last story. Then John did those two books for Boom. Going, oh, he's really writing comics. And then I did the Joker. They go, oh, he really is writing comics. You know, I think at first they just thought, oh, yeah, it's another celebrity. He's going to do a comic and walk away. No, he writes comics.
Wow. It's good to hear that how involved you both are with the process. It's not just a brand name. It actually means something.
Oh, yeah. No, we don't do things that we're not involved in. It's like when they're going, John's touring? What does he do on tour? He plays the music he's written for decades, and the music he's written this year, and the albums that are, you know. It's like, what do you think he's doing? Yeah.
Do you personally like his band, or is it not your
type? Oh, yeah. Oh, are you kidding me? Come on, he's got Tenacious D. D's backup band is his backup band, and our godson and son are you know, synth and lead guitar, and he wound up being his top 50 heavy metal tours when he did the world tour. When I told him that, he just went, oh, stop fucking with me. And I went, no, actually, you're voted in the top heavy metal tours. He goes, oh, that's stupid.
That's stupid.
But, you know, it's a great show when he's touring.
Yeah.
And no, I love his music.
Now, you were also producer in a lot of his films.
Yes.
Okay, so obviously he's created this kind of brand with you. Do you guys have any little qualms, or is it like, oh, he's a pain in the ass to work with, or anything like that?
No, every producer who ever produced with him, what I can tell you is you can tell a John Carpenter movie, you can't tell which ones who produced.
Okay.
He's a easy director for every producer. I've produced the most of his movies of any producer.
Yeah.
I did not start in the movie industry with him. I was in the movie industry 13 years before I met him. But, you know, I think if you ask Larry Franco, if you ask, you know, anybody, we'd all say he's the easiest guy to produce for because he's realistic in terms of, you have a problem, you go to him with a $5, $10, and $25 solution. He'll choose one. If you need to come up with something bigger for some idea he has, you go, okay, now here's three places I can take the money from. Which place do you want me to take it from in order to pay for that?
Okay.
You know, you don't have problems often because he understands our responsibility to the studio. We make a deal for a schedule and a budget. We never go over those.
Okay, wow. So he's not really like a diva or anything like that to work with?
No, you got to make sure his parking space is there. And you got to make sure that the food isn't weird. Outside of that, everything's cool.
He's big on the parking spaces.
Yeah, you just don't mess with his parking space. And that's okay.
That's good to know.
Yeah.
Okay, just to kind of wrap this up, I always try to bring a question that I bring anytime I do an interview. I try to do the same question for that day. And this set of interviews I've been asking, are you familiar with TED Talks?
Yes.
If you had to do a TED Talk, what would it be on?
Oh, man. Sure, anybody care what I have to say?
It's more about something that's very specific to you. We've had someone say, I can do a TED Talk on how to take cat pictures.
No, I think it would be on the importance of the environment right now and what a crisis we're in. I trained with Al Gore on a climate reality project.
Uh-huh.
And one of the things I'm most proud of is getting my investment banker to start a whole division on green investment. And so the unexpected would probably be that I would try and talk to people about the green economy.
Oh, but that's very admirable, though.
Yeah, green economy and jobs in the United States. You know, I think those are the things that worry me the most. And the steps we have to take to put ourselves right again.
It'd be a lot of steps to take.
Yeah, and it's not undoable. It's very doable, and investing in a green economy actually pays just as well as destroying the planet.
Oh, very much so.
Yeah.
But they always choose the wrong one, right?
Because there's propaganda to turn it the other way. And if you don't give back to our planet, you know, people like to think of, oh, what do you care about a polar bear? I don't know, what do you care about your grandkids?
Yeah. That's true.
There's actually an artist in Artist Alley who has a children's book he illustrated called Sorry We Missed You. And it's just animals that are now extinct.
Yeah, well, guess what the next one's going to be? You know, the Earth abides.
Yeah.
But the different species go extinct.
Yeah, very much so.
And they'll be probably pretty glad when we're gone.
Exactly. For the next ones.
You bet.
Yeah. But it's a very interesting book.
I bet. And actually, I'm familiar with it. And I think that hopefully people turn out in this next election. I'm very encouraged by South Carolina. And take this seriously, that you can't just stay home or say, I'm not my conscience. And your conscience about what? How about you start caring about everybody other than yourself?
That's perfect.
Well, thank you so much.
Thank you.
All right, this is Alex from Super Cheesy Radio, Front Row Network, and NPR Illinois, signing off.